What's up, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new episode from the Lions Cove podcast. I'm your host, Marcelo, and today we are back with a brand new episode. I have a very special guest, my good friend, my good buddy, Jake Phillips. Jake, it's an honor to have you on the podcast today.
It's great to be here, Sal.
Yeah, so Jake was the last one out of, you know, one of our friend groups at John Carroll to be interviewed. Me and him have been talking about it for a while, and now we're finally here, and I'm excited to go through your background, go through, you know, your journey, and I'm excited to have you on the show today.
Yeah, let's get into it, man.
All right. So to give my man Jake a proper intro, played 3 years here at John Carroll. He's been one of my best friends here since freshman year. He lived like, what, 5-6 doors down? No, you were on like the other
just
side.
Just on the hallway, yeah, on the other side though.
Yeah, so Jake was on the whole other side, but me and him met actually by playing basketball, and then eventually we just got close, and it's
a lot of memories freshman
year. Ton of memories all the way to our senior year. Well, my senior year, Jake graduated last May. So Jake's still been around, so it's definitely great to have him around. But yeah, so Jake played football here, linebacker, John Carroll University for 3 years. So in high school, he was all academic All Ohio, honor roll every semester, graduated fourth in his class, which is very impressive. He was a team captain, third team All Ohio, first team All Conference, first team All Area, first team All District, team MVP. I mean, you talk about an athlete, that's Jake. He's also a great basketball player as well, good at many sports. So 2022 here at JCU, in a game he recorded 4 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, a sack, and a forced fumble against Muskingum. In 2022, he was all-academic OAC, and in 2023, he tailed 6 solo tackles, 3 tackles for loss, and 2 sacks against Heidelberg. That was just in one game, so that was pretty impressive. Overall, Jake's had a great career here at John Carroll. So Jake, obviously you played linebacker here for 3 years. What was the biggest lesson you learned on and off the field?
I think that everything takes time. Like, anything worthwhile will take time. Came in freshman year. Like you said, I was kind of... I did some things in high school, and I thought highly of myself, as most high school kids do. And then coming into college, like, it's a big reality check. Trying to play a varsity sport, even at the D3 level. I mean, it's a reality check for everybody who comes in of, like, you're not going to come in first day, step in, and be the guy. And I was pretty weary of that. Didn't really recognize or understand that was how it was going to go. And about a week and a half into camp freshman year, back when we had Rick Finotti, so fall camp was it was a grueling time in life. But I was 8th on the depth chart for my position, and I just could not understand it. No disrespect to any other guys who were ahead of me on the depth chart list, but I thought I was playing well, thought I was doing some good things. And I got dinner with my parents at Outback Steakhouse in Macedonia, and this was about 2 weeks into freshman year fall camp, and I told them straight up, like, I think I want to quit. Like, I don't think I want to play anymore. It's not fun at that point because I was so low on the depth chart and we were getting close to our first scrimmage. I basically was a glorified hitting dummy for the entire D-line and the linebackers. And that was not really fun. It wasn't the football that I intended to play. It wasn't what I wanted to do at John Carroll. And my dad said, great things take time. And I didn't fully comprehend what that meant at the moment. I just, you know, was pissed off. My dad just said some stupid words and nothing really makes sense. And I didn't hate my life right now. I think that, like, relationships, like Marcel, like we got heated the first time in the basketball court, and as any, you know, guys and girls, but as any guy knows, you know, when you get heated on the basketball court with somebody, right after that you're gonna dap them up and walk off the court and, you know, be best friends. But that took time to understand things like that, and that kind of all the way comes back to football too. If you're going to play and you're going to be successful, like, you're going to have to wait your turn, work on your craft, be patient, and your time will come. So that was a big thing that I learned that took a while to get there, but I'm very glad that I got to that point.
Wow, so you were 8th on the depth chart. Like, how many, like, linebackers, like, were there? 8?
It was a 4-2-5 defense, and we were set up as an overhang defender, so it could go into like a 3-3-5, kind of like a 3-2-6 at times. So it was more so a TJ Watt position, if you will. I mean, he drops back in coverage probably 15-20% of the time. That was kind of what our role was. You know, we were in run fits on the D line, and we were rushing the passer a lot off the edge, but still got into pass coverage a little bit here and there. It was definitely a change of scenery for me coming from high school and playing middle linebacker the whole time, but I enjoyed it. I love getting nitty gritty with the D line or with the O line, and it was an adjustment for me to start, and then being 8th on the depth chart and really, like I said, being a glorified hitting dummy and not really actually playing football. That was a lesson learned for sure.
Yeah, and then obviously, you know, you have a great friend group here at Carroll, mm-hmm. and I mean, you know, that definitely has like an impact off the field, like, as well. You know, kind of like how you mentioned, like, when you're, you know, in practice, you're going like full speed, you know, talking crap, going mm-hmm. right at each other, but then after, you know, kind of like how you said. It's more of like a family, like brotherhood. So yeah. I'm sure the relationships that you had then also carry on today as well.
Definitely.
So before football, you played basketball in high school, but you dealt with injuries. So how did those setbacks shape your mindset and transition to focusing on football? Do you think you would have stuck with basketball if you never got hurt?
That was always, I really want to say basketball is more my first love. My dad had some injuries in his football career, and that always kind of was passed down more so in the idea of we don't want to start him playing tackle too young. So I was playing basketball well before I ever played, flag football and whatnot. But before I'd ever played real football, I was playing lots of basketball and fell in love with the game. I played year round. I mean, I would play on travel teams back when we could do travel teams with the whole school. So, you know, Orville had a cool travel team. We all, you know, all the guys, so we loved playing with each other. And then I played AAU through my sophomore year of high school. And I really loved the game. Freshman year, broke my foot. And then sophomore year, I had mono the entire season.
What?
Lost about 35 pounds. So that was a rude awakening for sure. But it was an interesting experience. And then junior year was the only year I was able to play the entire season. And then senior year, I had torn my shoulder in football. And I had opted to be able to be healthy for freshman year of college. I opted to have surgery somewhere in December, I think it was. And that was about 3 games into my senior year. So I played the first 3 games knowing full and well. Practiced for a month and a half. And I played 3 games knowing full well that was going to be it for me. When I decided to transition more of my focus to football, I mean, probably after freshman year, I don't know if anybody can believe it, but I was a skinny, scrawny guy, and I played guard at the time. So my freshman year, I was lucky enough to get on the JV team and was lucky enough to get some minutes on varsity to play defense for, you know, here and there. I was always the foul guy. So we had an offensive scorer who had 3 or 4 fouls late in the fourth, and would go down to the end of the bench and grab Jake and toss him in there and play defense for a little bit, pick up a few fouls. I loved it. It was a great time. But freshman year football was definitely when I think I really realized how much I love playing football and like the intricacies of the game, the relationships, the camaraderie. It really just everything about it just brought me just pure love for the game. And I still love basketball to this day, but I don't think if injuries, it's hard to determine that, you know, without the injuries, whether you'd stick with the sport or not. But I can't imagine I still would, knowing how I feel about the game of football. It's just been a true love of mine for as long as I can remember. There's nothing better than a crisp fall Saturday afternoon watching football. So
yeah. Well, wow. I mean, going through all those injuries, I mean, even, you know, at times, like how you said, like freshman year, then right to sophomore year, and then, you know, with like obviously like the sickness.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, that's just got to be hard, you know, going, you know, I guess having that passion for basketball still, and then, you know, just experiencing that. It's definitely a challenge, but I mean, obviously, you know, you fought through it, you got through it.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking about the times like when I was going through like you know, injuries, breaking ankles, like all that stuff, like kind of just like thinking about that. It's like just takes so much time just to rehab, just to really get yourself together, really kind of, you know, go through all that, like even as a kid in high school, because you're still growing, you're still like still trying to process everything. Like, you know, when something happens now, I feel like it's different because we think about it more.
Yeah.
And we really like analyze everything. When back then, when you get hurt, it's like, oh no, you kind of just don't really think about all of that stuff. But it takes time, takes a lot of effort, takes the mental, the physical, just everything. So, you know, I definitely can not relate to you because you've experienced so much, but I definitely know how you feel about all that.
Yeah.
So the next question is, you earned a spot on the D3Football.com team of the week in your final season. So what was going through your mind during that game? I mean, you know, kind of like how we mentioned earlier, you had 6 solo tackles, 3 tackles for loss, and 2 sacks in one game. I mean, that's crazy. Like, you were putting in work. So what was going through your mind, and did you realize, like, during the game that you were performing at such a high level, or did you realize it kind of afterwards?
I think that we had, during my time at JC, we had a couple close games with Heidelberg, and we just kind of felt that the last time we had played at Heidelberg didn't end well. Lost in overtime on the first play of their possession. We got stopped on the 1-yard line, first play of their possession in OT. They only threw a slot fade for a touchdown. And it kind of stung, you know. We didn't really, not that we respected our opponents, but we didn't really think that they were a formidable opponent in the aspect of actually beating us. And, you know, it still left a sting even after a couple years. So that week, I don't really know what it was, but everybody had kind of a higher, crisp focus going into the game plan and an actual practice day in and day out, making sure everybody had the right steps, making sure we had the right game plan. I mean, it really wasn't about like me per se, but it was, I mean, obviously you can't, as in the human nature, you can't deny like the adrenaline you get when you're out there, you know, making plays. And it was fun. It was a great time. But I knew that we as a defense were having a great game because every single time I felt like I was in the backfield, I would see Bricker Teal, the other defensive end, he would be in the backfield. And they were driving down at the end of the first half, and I thought I was going to go in and get another one. And Bricker comes comes out from like literally nowhere, jumps in front of me, sacks the quarterback, and I couldn't do anything but smile and be happy because, I mean, we were getting after it as a team. It was a great feeling, no better feeling in football than when you go out there, you execute how you're supposed to, you play how you're supposed to, you play how you know you can in your head, and you win a game. So it was an all-around great experience. The team played well, offense played insane that game. We had a freshman pick six. Like, there was just everything going right for the team. That was a great game. Great fun one to be a part of.
Wow. And also, too, you know, to be on, like, D3Football.com, like, that's you know, showcasing all schools, like, you know, across, like, the nation. And also, too, it was cool because John Carroll put, like, an article, like of you and, like, your background and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was, like, sweet, like, to read.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was unexpected. I knew that after the game, you know, I played a decent game, but it was, like, Tuesday before practice or something like that, and Coach Berman pulls me to the side, and he goes, hey, I, you know, got to congratulate you. And I had no idea what he was talking about, and it was cool, definitely, to see my face up there. But we've had a lot of D3 Team of the Week players, and hopefully, you know, JCU can keep the train rolling and keep more coming. So
right. Yeah. So linebacker is one of the most physically demanding positions in football. So what was your approach to training and staying sharp for game day?
I would definitely say a different approach than most. I definitely was more lax during the week. I had shoulder problems, like I said, in senior year of high school. I tore my shoulder, my right one, and then through college, I ended up tearing both of them again. And at that point in my life, I had already decided I was going to graduate a year early, and I wasn't going to come back for another season. And with them both being torn, I definitely was more relaxed during the week and not taking as many reps, not taking as many physically hitting, you know, inside runs type of plays. And I do think it benefited me come Saturday. I think that they trusted me at that point, and, you know, in my career, to be able to play exponential snaps compared to what I was, you know, sophomore and freshman year. So while I was taking those reps off, per se, physically, I definitely think that, you know, watching the plays, watching film, little things like that, and just, like, I think historical knowledge plays a big part, especially in Division III athletics. You know teams, you know what they want to do, you know what they want to run, and making sure that you're still sharp on those things. But then I feel like the biggest part of football, especially on the defensive side of the ball, you just kind of got to play with your hair on fire. And I feel like if you do that, play 100% all the time, even if, you know, you're in the wrong gap here or there, coach is going to be happy, you're going to have opportunities to make plays, and that's what I would say my approach was definitely slower than others come game time. I just, adrenaline for me on Saturdays was not hard to come by.
It's smart that, like, you weren't, like, pushing yourself, like, too hard, like as well. I feel like, you know, athletes tend to really, you know, come back from injury, like, way too quick, or you, like, even in practice, like, if they're still, like, hurt, or if, you know, they, like, you know, sprain their ankle, they want to come right back on the court or on the field. So, you know, that's very smart of you to kind of take your time, kind of ease into it. That way you're ready to go for Saturday. Because, you know, obviously we see today a lot of, like, athletes who rush back and then they're not the same, and then they get hurt again, and then it's even worse. Yeah. So definitely props to you for that. Obviously, I don't really know too much about football. I played from the fourth grade to the sixth grade. So but I mean, especially at the college level, you know, I'm sure the practices are very demanding, very intense, and then you know, you have your ice baths, and then you have your, you know, stretching, your, you know, recovery time. So
yeah, it did not help. I was not a big fan of stretching. I still remember the Bob Wiley video for the Browns, an old O-line coach. He's a big son of a gun, but you know, he was complaining about how long the Browns were taking to stretch for a practice, and he goes, hey guys, you know, we won two World Wars without stretching, so I think we can win a football game without stretching. And I took that a little bit too far to heart, but yeah, I mean, to each their own.
Yeah, I feel like in high school I wasn't too big on stretching, but now, yeah, I'm definitely gotta
do it. We're getting old.
We're getting have old, to man. Before bed, when you wake up, everything. So leadership can look different depending on the situation. As a linebacker, you led by example on defense. So how did you balance being vocal with showing through action? Obviously, being one of your good friends, I know, you know, you're very passionate about sports. You love the game. So I know that you were definitely vocal all the time.
I definitely was vocal all the time. Growing up a little bit, maturing a little bit, definitely realized that, in sports, you know, sometimes there's times to say things, and there's times, sometimes, you know, keep your mouth shut. When I was playing, you know, I definitely was not that clear-minded. So I definitely talked a little bit too much at times, but I was thankfully had a lot of good teammates around, you know, that keep me level-headed, keep me clear-minded, and focus on, you know, the point or the task at hand. And I think that, like I said, I took some reps off the last year that I played, but the first 2 years, I definitely, don't be prideful, but I'm proud of the way that I worked in practice and fought, you know, to get a chance to play. You know, sophomore year, I got the nod to start, you know, weeks 1 and 2, and flat out, I just did not perform. And to be frank, the guy who was behind me, I thought was better at the time. And so he got in there and he played, you know, amazing football. And that was a tough pill to swallow, as it would be for anybody, because I was was, you know, still immature at the time, and I was like, why am I not playing? Why am I getting, you know, no snaps or anything? But again, the kid was just a better football player than me, and he deserved to get those snaps. But I feel like that goes back to your point of how are you a leader when you can't be vocal, which at the time, you know, if I'm not on the field, you know, I can cheer him on. I can be a great teammate in that aspect. But I think that time in my life definitely was a time that I was able to take something more from the game in the aspect of watching from the sideline. And if I see something that the offense is showing, or I see something that they're doing, different cadences that I'm picking up, different positions the running back's getting, you know, standing still, standing slump, you know, what is he doing? What's the key for that? And then letting those guys know, there's no need for pride in the aspect of, oh, I'm not playing, nobody else deserves to have a good game. Like, yeah, I want my guys to go out there and, you know, perform. And it was awesome to watch him play. And then later in the year, he unfortunately got hurt a little bit, and I was able to get an opportunity to play some more snaps towards the end of the season. And, you know, I was able to use that time that I spent kind of not on the field as much to move forward in a little bit more of a leadership role within the defense, vocally, and just kind of keeping guys in check. I think that, like we talked about, you know, before the podcast, I went to a high school that had some people that didn't have, you know, great home situations, and sometimes coaches were confused on why they weren't able to reach these kids. And it wasn't anything more than you just got to be personable with them. You gotta come from a spot where they can reach you, and you can reach them. And I think that learning that in high school, when, you know, I was still immature, but having that in the back of my brain come to college, and then I had that moment of when I was immature and I wasn't in the spot that I wanted to be at, and so I lashed out, not to others, but, you know, in private with myself. And then it was kind of a moment of reflection. I was like, hey, I can still be a leader for this team, and I can still do right by others in more ways than just playing on the field and making plays. And I'm really grateful for that time in my life, because I don't think I would have grown up as fast if I hadn't experienced that.
Definitely, like, watching people, definitely seeing how they, you know, operate as, like, a leader. You know, I know, for example, in high school, there's always people that I always, like, wanted to, you know, look up to and, you know, take after certain moves that they would do. I mean, we always, like, grow up, like, watching these, like, famous athletes, these high-level athletes, you know, do certain moves. We try to do the same thing, whether it's on the field or on the court. So even just, like, being on the sideline, just watching during a game, I mean, you definitely learn a lot. And you could see, you know, what, like, a, like, leader does, you know, in different situations. You have, like, you know, the game winners. You have, you know, you're down 10, 5, with, like, 5 minutes left. Like, how do you, you know, come back from this? And, but, yeah, I mean, definitely being personable, like, with others, and really just, you know, just being friendly to everyone. You know, obviously people come through with different situations, different backgrounds. But, I mean, I feel like as, like, we get older, you know, we really, you know, like, realize, like, you know, this stuff. I mean, we have it in the back of our heads in high school, but, you know, obviously, like, when you get older, you think about it more, yeah. And you kind of realize, like, certain situations, and I feel like it definitely makes us better people just by understanding everyone and really just getting to, like, know their story.
100%, yeah.
So, you won a JCU intramural championship in basketball, so tell us about that experience, and how did it compare, you know, to your high school basketball?
You know, it was an experience. It was fun. I mean, I was playing with my boys in college, some of them more basketball gifted than others, but it was awesome to go out there and watch everybody get buckets, and just, you know, some of the guys who just, they never played organized basketball, and then in the middle of the game, you know, you toss them the ball and they just chuck something up and it goes in, and you know, everybody's getting teed, everybody's throwing their hands up in the air and celebrating and getting juiced. That was cool. Yeah, I mean, competition wise maybe it wasn't the same as like high school when everybody is almost a full-time basketball player, but no, it was a great experience. I never won a championship in basketball in high school, so you know, check that off the bucket list for the JCU intramural championship. But no, it was a good time, and we had some great players on the team too. I mean, a couple guys who had played basketball in high school, and just really, really gifted dudes. Watching them play ball was always fun. But no, it was a good experience. I love intramural sports. I'll be a big plug for those the rest of my life. I think that I think students in college should play as many sports as they can in intramurals. I just think it's a great time. Get a sweat on, get to play, get to be a part of a team, even if it's for a short amount of time. But being a part of a team always, you know, makes you feel better inside and makes you have something to look forward to.
Yeah, and like the one thing that's cool too is how there's like a comp league, and there's also like rec.
The rec league, yeah.
I think the rec league is honestly like the best league because
there's one to win.
Yeah.
But it's still not, it's, you know, it's not as aggressive.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, people still take it pretty like serious though. Like we had a team run like boxing ones, 2-3 zones. I'm like, okay, this is like rec.
A lot of teams running zones the past couple years. I've been seeing, I was like, I think we might have started that. I think freshman year, you and I ran zone a couple times against against the lacrosse boys. But yeah, I think a couple teams saw that and took that upon themselves to start rocking some zone. But yeah, I'll say that we started that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, yeah, IM Sports is like definitely the best. I mean, I'm sure at like the like larger schools, it's a lot different. But here, you know, you kind of have like the same teams every year, which definitely creates, you know, some like tension.
Some rivalries.
Yeah, I think there's just one team I know that only beat me once.
Really?
Once or twice. Wow. Like out of the whole 4 years here.
And you're going to remember that too.
Yeah. And like, it's funny because we met, I think last semester and this semester to go to the championship and we beat them twice. And we won the championship twice.
That's awesome.
So like that, like, you know, thinking of like times like those and even, you know, when you don't have like, you know, the most skilled players on your team, but they're also like your best friends and you know, seeing them also like score and also have a great time. That just definitely means like a lot.
Yeah.
So playing in those intense 1v1 matchups, me and Jake, we have a ton of one-on-one matchups. Been doing it since freshman year. We play all the time. It's super competitive, super heated. You know, I usually don't talk when I play, but when I play against Jake, I always talk and it always comes back to haunt me, which I have to tell myself I can't do it, because now with like the one-on-ones, like, you know, I definitely talk a little bit more, but when I'm playing fives, I don't talk at all. I need the fives mentality. I need to switch that into the ones for sure. So, you know, it's definitely more than just a game. It's definitely about proving yourself to one another. So how do you handle the mental side of those moments, especially when the stakes feel so high, even in something so casual?
You know, those one-on-one games, you never leave with a great feeling knowing you lost those games. Like you said, even though it's something as silly as a one-on-one game, you know, it doesn't hold any bearing on the rest of our lives. But like you said, it's always heated, always competitive, always a great time. But yeah, I mean, those games get they get tight, they get close, and you don't want to tense up and miss your shots, and then, you know, Sel is saying something and I'm saying something back, and I'm trying to dribble the ball while this whole thing's going on, and then you know, then I turn it over, we're going back and forth doing it all again. No, I mean, it's not it's always more banter than it is, you know, coming after each other. But I enjoy there's only been a few people in my life that I've been able to play all these one-on-one kind of games with and, you know, banter the entire time, and then right after, you know, we're going back to doing whatever, hanging out, eating food, just chilling. And I think it's special. It's always held a place in my heart, and I don't think that's ever going to change. So I appreciate you for that.
Yeah, no, well, thank you for that, because obviously, you know, not playing high school basketball anymore, even at like the highest like level, obviously we still have that, like, you know, intense summer league, which is, you know, super high level, but I would say playing in those like one-on-ones definitely still keeps me like, you know, in shape, gives me that like, you know, competitive spirit, because I feel like, you know, I'm playing like IM or I'm playing like something else, I don't really have that competitive spirit. It's more so just to have fun, whereas like when I'm playing against you, like, I really have to, you know, try my best, or else, you know, you're gonna go back to the crew and be like, yes, hello, lost, like, blah blah blah, and I'm like, oh my gosh, now I have to deal with it for the rest of the week until we play again.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, you've definitely kept my, like, you know, my shot, my like dribble moves, everything still in shape, which will hopefully lead me to a championship this summer. But
summer showdown, baby. Everybody's gotta show up.
Yeah. So you know, I you know, kind of like how you're saying, there's very little people that, you know, I love playing one-on-one against, and you are definitely one of the people that I always love going against. So it's always a good time, and those are always memories that will hold a lot of meaning in my heart.
Yeah.
So golf requires a lot of mental focus and patience. Me and Jake have never gone golfing, but, you know, hopefully we
have played against each other one time.
We did?
The JCU intramural tournament.
Oh yeah, I was horrible though. Yeah. Like,
that was a crazy moment.
Yeah, that was bad. I was not good at all.
That was awesome.
But hopefully this summer we'll definitely play. So do you ever find yourself drawing from your football experiences, like handling pressure or staying focused in the big moments when you're playing around with your boys?
Not even in the slightest. I am
really,
I am the worst mental golfer I know. I am the most like pessimistic and just Debbie Downer possible when it comes to the course. Like if I go triple bogey, I mean, I'll go par, followed up with a triple bogey, and then I'm just toast. Like the rest of the round, just chalk it up. Like, yeah, I'm probably slicing my next tee shot 40 yards out of bounds, and then chunking my next shot after that, flying it over the green, getting up, three putting again for another quad. No, I love golf. I love the game of golf, especially, you know, retired athletes. It's kind of become the staple game of retired athletes, I feel like. But I enjoy the competitive aspect and, you know, trying to be better than you were the last time you went out. But no, mentality wise, I am probably the worst golfer ever. I let it get to me. I'm as soft as they come when it comes to golf's mental game. But you know, I'm working on it, trying to get better.
Yeah.
Trying to become more of a, you know, mental fortress, become a little fortified up there. But you know, we have yet to see any benefits of that. So we're still working.
Wow. So nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Golf is like completely different from.
It's just kind of. I just think it's a a different animal. Like in football, especially with golf being as new as it is to me versus football, you know, you do the same moves in practice all the time. And it just kind of becomes second nature. You just kind of don't even think about what you're doing. And then you get up from the ground and you realize you just tack somebody. It's like, oh, okay. Golf, you know, I never played competitively, and I never played growing up. Learned it from some of my buddies at JCU. And I never really practiced. So it's more so let's just go out there and shoot as best we can. And, you know, the leaves fall as they may. So sometimes it's really good. Sometimes it's really bad. Sometimes we stick somewhere in the middle. You know, you never really know what you're going to get with me on the course. So it's an interesting experience.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely looking forward to playing with you.
Yeah, we'll have to get out there.
Like, aside from, like, the JCU thing.
Yeah, I don't
think I'm doing the JCU thing.
Nah, I think a lot of people are not doing it this year.
Yeah, I actually have a little side quest. I'm actually DJing.
At the event? Or that night?
Like, that night.
That's awesome. Where at?
Is that, like, a formal?
For high school?
No, for Carol.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I've never actually DJed before, but I'm
looking... the first time for everything, man.
Right, you know, I can, like, look up...
the door?
Yeah, I can ask ChatGPT, or I can ask YouTube, or...
ChatGPT, you know, make me a banger playlist.
Yeah, or, like, you know, hey, like, teach me, or do, like, step-by-step how to
songs. You got, like, the machine, or you just tapping? Like, you just tapping songs?
I have no clue. If I'm tapping songs, that'll be a lot easier, but if I'm...
You can, like, mesh them together, too?
I think I can, like, through, like, the Spotify app.
Okay.
But...
That's gonna be... That might be where I'm at Saturday. That's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, so we'll see. I know. I'm kind of like, it's like the first year I'm not doing the golf outing.
Yeah.
But obviously I'm not that good anyways, so it's like,
you're working on it.
Yeah, I can make a hot dog in the air fryer.
What?
Yeah. Like,
what does that even mean?
Because like you always get like a hot dog like at like the turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead I can just make a hot dog in the air fryer.
So that's why you're not going to golf?
No, I mean, I kind of go for the hot dog. Like, okay. Come on. That's like the best part.
I did feel a little sacrilegious the last time I went out. I did not get a hot dog. And I was driving home and I felt kind of empty. And I was like,
yeah, come on, dude.
I never got the dog. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's like my favorite part. Because I'm not good on the green. So at least like when I get off, I can, you know, like reward myself with a hot dog, like, and a bag of Lay's chips.
Let me get a hot dog. I just three-putted. Give me two hot dogs.
Yeah, hot dog and Lay's chips. That's like the family staple.
Sure, I like it.
So every Browns fan has that one unforgettable moment, whether it's high or low, which I'm not sure if there's too many highs coming from a lot of Browns fans. You know, let's go Saints. So what is your most memorable moment as a Browns fan, and how did it shape your overall connection to the team?
You know, I really don't know what specific moment like triggered my fandom for the Browns. I think just as most people do, most sane people, you know, they grow up watching their dad cheer on a favorite team. And that just innately becomes their favorite team. And I definitely tested the waters a little bit. You know, I had some posters up in my room of other athletes and like, you know, oh, I was a fan of this team, fan of that team, you know, when you're a kid. But we had a running back in the early 2010s, maybe a little before then too, by the name of Isaiah Crowell. And the announcers always called him the Crow.
Yeah.
And, you know, by no means statistically was he a fantastic running back. But for some reason, I just absolutely loved the guy. I could not get enough of him. I thought the Crow was a beast. I love watching him run. He always ran so hard. But yeah, I mean, I go into games as a kid, I feel like kind of set the stage for me to become a fan growing up. But then the realization of, you know, oh, we're that kind of a franchise set in, you know, and we go 1-15 and followed it up real quickly with an 0-16 season was definitely, it was a sobering moment, I think is a good choice of word for that. Realizing that, you know, no other franchise in the NFL has ever gone through a 2-year stretch like that. And that was painful. Because like I tell all my buddies, you know, I like Ohio State, I like the guards, I like Cavs, but I love the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, it's really a shame that it is that way for me because, you know, they don't really give much back in return for the love that I give them. But, I mean, I'm never going to... Browns fandom, you know, solidified for everybody. COVID 2020, Browns go, I want to say 10-6, I think, we make the playoffs. And, you know, we follow that up with a round one game in Pittsburgh. You know, there's no fans. I think that time they were a little bit more lenient, had about 5,000 fans in the stands or something like that. But a couple Browns players got COVID. Head coach Kevin Stefanski got COVID, so he's watching the game from his basement, you know, getting away from everybody. And our special teams coach is the head coach for the game that we make the playoffs in. And the first game we made the playoffs since, I want to say, 2002, back with Tim Couch, or maybe 2010, I think we went 10-6, missed them. But, so it was the first playoff game for the Browns in a long time. And, you know, I'm nervous. It's Big Ben, it's the Steelers, you know, they got all the history, they got all the tradition. And then first snap of the game, you know, maybe a Hall of Fame Famer. I know he's, you know, he's been an All-Pro multiple times, but Marquise Pouncey throws that ball right over Big Ben's head, and I Larry Ogunjobi or somebody gets back there. Maybe it was Miles Garrett, I don't know, whoever else. Somebody jumped on that ball, and we scored a touchdown the first play of the game, starting on defense. And I, like, that moment, I just, like, I was elated. I was just so stinking excited, and it really is unfortunate because that was probably the highlight of my entire Browns fandom. But, you know, we're hoping for better times. Browns fans are starting to realize, you know, I would classify myself as a delusional Browns fan most of my life. You know, we hired Rod Chudzinski, and I was convinced he was going to take us to the Super Bowl coming over from the Panthers. We hired Mike Pettine from the Packers. I'm like, dude, this guy's, you know, defensive-minded freak. Like, we're going to be the greatest defense ever. Like, we're going to go to the Super Bowl. No, and still haven't been to one. But, you know, Browns fans are loyal, and I still maintain that while, yes, we are most likely the worst franchise in the NFL, Browns fans as a group have to be the most loyal fans in all of sports. There's no program or team that has been as historically bad as the Cleveland Browns, and fans still show up and show out, and it'll be the same for me for the rest of my life. And hopefully at some point we can get some more retribution for that, for the love of our team. But
I mean, definitely talking about, like, the Browns, I mean, you know, they have the most loyal fan base, even though, you know, it pains me to say that, but, you know, just, like, even watching them when I was little, like, my dad's a big Browns fan, my mom and my sister, they're now Saints fans, so okay. They don't watch the Browns anymore. So it's just my dad in one room, then me and my mom and my sister in the other room. So I mean, just, you know, it's just seeing, like, the games, like, I'll never forget, it was the Browns versus the Buccaneers, and the Browns lost on a game-winning field goal, and you just see my dad's face go from so happy, like, we're gonna win this game, to in a matter of minutes.
The Browns have found just about every single possible way to lose a football game. I was in attendance for a field goal that we were going for the win. That was a tied game against the Ravens, playing at home. And we were going for the game-winning field goal kick. They proceeded to block it with 3 seconds left, pick it up, and then return it for the game-winning touchdown when it was supposed to be us with a three-point victory.
Wow.
The Browns had Joe Flacco a couple years ago play for the Browns, and 2 years prior, the Browns were up 13 points with under 2 minutes to go in the game. I think it was about a minute and 40 seconds left to go. And the Jets, with Joe Flacco leading the offense, took us down, scored a touchdown, covered the onside kick, and then went down and scored another touchdown and kicked extra point and won the game by 1 point. And I still have yet to ever see that. I think at that point there was a stat that flashed across the screen that said NFL teams leading by 13 points or more with under 2 minutes to go in NFL games are a perfect 350 something and zero. And now they're 350 something and zero and one, with that one being the Cleveland Browns.
Wow.
So that's pretty much sums up the life of a Browns fan.
Yeah, wow. That's a perfect way to put it.
Yeah.
So as you move forward in life, what kind of legacy do you hope to leave, both as an athlete and as a person? And what steps are you taking now to make that a reality?
I don't know if I necessarily want to leave a legacy, but for the people that I know and the people I've come in contact with, I'm a people person. I love to have a conversation. I love to talk. And I just feel like I want people to remember me as someone, like, who cared, someone who, you know, cared what was going on in their lives, who cared about them as a person, and just, I guess, a nice person. As an athlete, I don't really care. I was never, you know, especially in high school basketball, I was never the guy who most people would write home about. I wasn't doing anything spectacular. And, you know, in football, you know, like I said, you know, run my mouth sometimes, but, you know, make a couple plays, help guys off the ground, whatever. Just more so as a human being, I would say. Just someone who cares, I think, is something I strive to, try to be personable and open to talk to everybody and anybody. I even talk to, you know, nut jobs like Cello, so, you know, you have that, but,
yeah. Thanks, Jake. But, yeah, I mean, awesome. So I didn't share this with you, so before we end the episode, I always, you know, every podcast ended off with a quote of the episode. So I'll say a quote, and you just tell me what it means to you, okay. And then you tell me and the audience a quote that you live by every single day.
Okay.
So this quote, usually I do something with, like, athletes or, you know, famous people. Actually, this person is famous, but it has nothing to do with sports. So this is from Oprah, actually, and she said, "Lots of people want to ride with you in the limo, but what you want is someone who will take the bus with you when the limo breaks down." Hmm. So what does that mean to you?
I feel like it's not about the journey. It's about the people you take along with you within the journey. You know, it could be not making the team, not performing to the level that you want to. Life, it could be getting that job, losing a job, whatever. You know, there's a lot of things, a lot of cards are dealt to you, I feel like, over your lifespan. But nothing good or bad, highs and lows, is what it is without the people around you. And if your plan is to, like, go into life solo, I mean, you know, everybody's more than welcome to do whatever they please, but in my eyes, I just don't think that, I don't think anything in life is worth it unless you're doing it with the people you love or for the people you love. You want to bring the people along with you on the journey that are going to make everything worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, well said, bro. 100%. So what quote do you live by every single day?
Quote that I like to live by, got it on the back screen of my personal laptop, you know, haven't opened that in a while. So a little bit rusty, but it's by a quote by the name of a man, Jack London, and he says, "The proper function of man is to live and not to exist." He says, "I shall not waste my days in trying to prolong them. I shall use my time." And that to me, just like every single day you wake up and you have an opportunity to do what? Like anything. You could do literally anything. There's 24 hours in a day. And you know, some believe, some don't, to each their own. But I believe it's a gift from God every time you wake up. Like, there's no promise that you get to wake up every day. And I think what he means in the quote is he's not waking up every single day to just exist and just to be. He wants to do something. And so, you know, taking that extra effort step to reach out and lend a helping hand, taking your time to stay after work a little bit and help somebody finish up a project, school project, somebody who looks a little down, like walking over and saying something positive to them, saying if they're okay, seeing if they're okay. I feel like a lot of times, and I think it's a quote that resonates with me because I feel like sometimes I catch myself doing that and just trying to exist and just trying to be. And I don't want to waste my time. None of our time is permanent. None of our time is infinite. And I think that there's a lot of good that we can do in the world if we use our time wisely and try to do it for, you know, do everything for the best of our willpower.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing that like always like stands out to me is that, like, you know, you never really know what people are going through, but also at the same time, people may, you know, put this like bad energy like towards you, like, you know, or for example, like they may not like what you do. They may just judge you based off this or that, and pretty much like, you know, they may not like you for you. However, I feel like it's always important to, because, you know, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, really. You don't know what's going on, you know, in their lives every day. And I feel like it's always good, like, no matter if they treat you, you know, bad, good, you know, negative, positive, always just say hi, always ask how they're doing, because I, you know, it's so important just to throw that kindness out there, throw that good energy out there, because even if they don't replicate it back, you know, you're still, you know, hopefully making their day better, making an impact on their day. Even, you know, that might be the best thing that happens to them all day is, yeah, you saying hi to them.
100%.
You know? So I feel like all that goes.
Kindness in the world, it goes a long way.
Yeah, definitely does. Well, Jake, that'll do it for this podcast. Shout out to Jake. Thank you for joining the podcast today. One of my great friends here from the time I've made here at John Carroll. A lot of conversations, a lot of watching football games, basketball games, a lot of one-on-ones, just a lot of great memories.
LeBron's
and
commercials.
Yeah, a lot of TikToks too. But yeah, no, everything definitely holds so much value to me. And I really appreciate you hopping on the podcast.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah. So that'll do it, everyone. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, share with friends and family. And new episodes out every week. This one, I think, will be out Tuesday. So I was supposed to drop one this week, but I actually dropped two last week. So I kind of gave myself like a little break.
A little reprieve.
Yeah. So now, look forward to one or two episodes every week until the time summer starts, and maybe I'll have more out. So that'll do it. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, share with family, friends. That'll do it. Peace.
Peace.